always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Happy Tuesday for all of you who have felt that today was Monday, like myself. It is Tuesday. We're almost halfway through the week. How about that? It is May 28th, 2024. This is 101.9 94.1. This is News Talk STL, your number one station in the region for live and local conservative talk. Tim Jones here back in the big chair along with Chris Arps in the big chair right next to me and Joey V. All three of us, the three amigos, back together here in the studio. How you doing, Chris? How's
I'm doing
weekend?
Fantastic. I'm interested to know how the two birthday boys celebrated their birthdays on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. What'd you do, Joey?
I saw Mad Max Furiosa and then hung out in the hot tub and just relaxed. Had a nice Yingling from our friend Ray Maxwell. He dropped off like 1,000 cans of that stuff.
Yes.
So I took a couple cubes home and had some fun with the family.
Did you have some avocado with that Yingling?
Oh, of course. Just right on the rim.
A little avocado slice.
Mm-hmm. Little salt, little avocado.
That's fantastic. We'll have to get a Furiosa recap from Joey near the end of the show. Mm-hmm. We got a jam-packed show for you here today. Chris, what did I do Saturday? Played a little golf with my buddies at the Legends, and what else did we do? Let's see. We went to the ball game Saturday night. Saw a big winner. 7-6 was the final.
Excellent.
Cards had a come from behind win. It was very exciting. Got to take the whole family. Got to spend time with both my daughters. Elder daughter Katie got up early this morning and headed to Wichita, Kansas, where she's going to be off and on during the summer for a summer camp. She's a camp counselor. She'll be back in about a month. And Abby's off swimming now and all that. So, Chris, we kind of unofficially kicked off summer this weekend along with everybody else. So it was a good birthday weekend. And the birthday festivities continue because we'll be celebrating you and Larry Connors this week.
That's right. My birthday is Thursday, and the great Larry Connors' birthday is Friday. This weekend, Tim, I crossed off one of my bucket list items.
What did you do?
My wife and I went out to the St. Francis County Rodeo out in Farmington, Missouri. Yeah. Saw some little horse bronking and some rope steering, cow steering, and all of that. Is, you know, I know these are animals and they're tough and all that, but my heart always breaks for the calf roping when the little cows are running out there and they rope them and, you know, wrestle them to the ground and then tie their legs together. Mm-hmm. It just seems so cruel.
We're going to make you a PETA spokesperson. No, it is. It's a Chris, you know what? It gives you a whole appreciation for how difficult life must be, you know, for everybody, for the cowboys and the cows out on a ranch.
And
you know?
I tell you this too. And I was going to, I took some video of the rodeo and I was going to send some of this audio to Joy, but I forgot about it. But if you've never been to a rodeo before, there's nothing like it when it comes to patriotism and people that love their country and America. It's kind of like, what you'd expect with NASCAR, where people are very patriotic. At the beginning of the rodeo, Tim, there was a couple of girls on horseback that rode around the thing with a flag. They said the Pledge of Allegiance. They sang the Star Spangled Banner. And what I was going to send to Joey at the end of the rodeo, they had about 7 or 10 wild horses that they would let just run around the arena. And the announcer was talking about God bless America and live your dreams and aren't how lucky we are, blessed we are to be in this great country, the United States of America. It was red, white, and blue, man. Mm-hmm. Rodeos, you don't see any, you're not going to see any kneeling down or turning your back on the Star Spangled Banner at a rodeo.
You felt like you were back in the United States of America.
It did. It was like, wow, this is how it's supposed to be. People actually love their country.
Americana.
People are loving America, showing flags, and it's not the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the only time when it's okay.
Exactly. And you know, Chris, we just wrapped up Memorial Day weekend. Of course, we were not here. We were on air on Friday, and we paid an homage to Memorial Day and for all the folks, the men and women around the world. world that have come from the United States of America and given their lives the ultimate sacrifice. It was yesterday. Chris, you sent us all a neat little clip. I want to mention this, and then we'll move on to some of the other very important breaking news of the day, and we have some very special guests here today as well. You sent a clip out of your great uncle, who is part of the Greatest Generation.
He was.
And the interview that he did, and can folks find that interview? Do you have it posted somewhere?
I can put it on my Facebook page. It's on my YouTube page. But my great uncle, Melly Arp, served as a Buffalo soldier during World War II. He served in Italy and he served in France. He was won 2 Bronze Stars for his bravery. He retells that story in a TV interview that he did for the local television station, KLTV in Longview, Tyler, Texas. It was a series, Tim, they were doing probably about 12 or 13 years ago of the vanishing greatest hero generation. And so they wanted to chronicle these guys' stories before they were gone. And my uncle was one of those stories. And just like the Greatest Generation, we had no idea. You hear these stories over and over and over. We had no idea he was a war hero until this special came out on TV on the local news.
Pretty cool interview. I enjoyed watching it, Chris. Thanks for sending it to everybody here at the station.
And
you know what would be interesting, Chris, if we could ever find this out? Your great uncle and my grandpa Tuno may have crossed paths because my grandpa was at the Italian front as well in World War II, serving as an infantryman.
He recalls a story talking about Axis Sally when they were in Italy and they were trying to embark and they were shooting at them and they were telling them, you're going to die, you're not going to live, and all of that, and dealing with that. And he tells a story of swimming to shore during the battle. And he was a good swimmer because he said he was a country boy that grew up swimming on the Sabine River down there in East Texas.
Fantastic. It really is. Folks, something I try to do every year, encourage you to do, the Band of Brothers series from HBO is fantastic. Yeah. Try to watch that between Memorial Day and Labor Day every year. I need to now watch, I want to watch The Pacific. They did a version of it. Of the soldiers in the Pacific region. Same time frame, different part of the world. And so I want to watch that too. So hope everybody took a moment. And during the, I thought it was really cool on Sunday at the old Memorial Tournament down in Texas, Chris. The PGA was down in Fort Worth and
Fort Worth.
Right. I guess I forgot they do this because it's only once a year. Right in the middle of the golf tournament on Sunday afternoon. This is the fourth day. Everybody's competing for first place. They stopped at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They did a huge flyover and everyone stopped play for a moment of silence that was like 5 minutes of silence to honor those who have fallen. So I thought that was pretty cool.
It was that, a lot of people forget what Memorial Day is all about. People just think it's mattress sales and white sales and barbecuing and having your friends and family over for dinner, but also it's also we lost heroes and we're there to remember them. You know, Memorial Day has always been a special holiday to me because, you know, every 6 or 7 years my birthday is on Memorial Day, and Memorial Day was actually the original day for Memorial Day until they put all holidays on Monday. So even though it was my birthday and I was a young kid, I always knew that, yeah, it's my birthday, but there's something else significant during this day as well. And I've had that with me my entire life.
It's a somber day. And it's a reflective day. And hopefully everybody did reflect on that. Thank you to all of you Gold Star families out there who have given all so that we may live free. And Chris and I and Joey can be on these free airwaves. We appreciate you all very much. We have a big announcement coming tomorrow. That's the first thing we want to tell y'all. It's a very big announcement. It's involving an event that is coming up in a few short weeks. We'll have all the details on that. We'll be announcing that at around 4:25 tomorrow afternoon. So our 4:25 guest every week should be a little bit of a hint. We'll be talking about this big event with Zach Smith tomorrow afternoon. All details at 4:25 tomorrow, Wednesday.
You know, Tim, speaking of Memorial Day, before we move on, you know, our illustrious Congresswoman Cori Bush sent out a very interesting note yesterday.
I was glad you brought that
up. As well as Ilhan Omar. And
yes.
I think Joey's got a clip. Joey, can we play cut 4?
Speaking of people who know nothing about Memorial Day.
Squad reps Ilhan Omar and Cori Bush are being criticized over Memorial Day posts made to their X accounts. The Department of Veterans Affairs distinguishes is between Veterans Day, which honors all who have served, and Memorial Day, which honors those who have died. Both Omar and Bush shared tweets that read, quote, "On Memorial Day, we honor the heroic men and women who served our country. We owe them more than our gratitude. They have more than earned access to quality mental health services, job opportunities, housing assistance, and the benefits they were promised." As well as this tweet, quote, "This Memorial Day and every day we honor our veterans in St. Louis. We must invest in universal health care, affordable housing, comprehensive mental health services, and educational and economic opportunities for our veterans as we work to build a world free of war and violence." They have since been deleted.
You know, Tim, I do have to give them a little bit of respect, because usually when there's mistakes like this, you throw the junior staffer under the bus and said they tweeted it out, they made a mistake. They're owning this, that they're too stupid to know what Memorial Day is. They're not throwing any junior staffers under the bus on this. They're like, yeah, we did it.
I guess the first step to recovery, Chris, is to get over the denial, right? What do they say? It's not just a river in Egypt. Yeah, I mean, everything they just said is so tragically, horribly laughable, and not in a funny way, because the veterans we're talking about are dead, right? So they don't need health care and all that. They need our thanks and our prayers for their eternal rest. And so, yeah, I mean, look, it's a mistake some people make, but congressmen and women on that day, as they're issuing an official tweet, should not be making that mistake. You don't wish a living veteran happy Memorial Day, because they're with us still.
Exactly.
We honor the fallen and we thank the families.
You know, Tim, we talk often on this show about President Joe Biden's lax schedule, how he does a couple of events a day. You know, there's one thing, too, that I've noticed and that the media has noticed also, is that whenever there is a holiday event, Joe Biden doesn't come to work the next day. He takes an extra 3 days. And guess what? Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, has no official events today.
Nothing today.
On his schedule. So they're going to try to rest him up, letting him 3 days rest. I bet he's still in Delaware.
He probably is. You know, Chris, I was talking with my father about this, and I'm not going to diagnose Joe Biden on the air. But you know, my father is a retired practicing veterinarian, and before anybody gives any jokes about dogs and cats and Joe Biden, my dad probably should have seen that dog that used to bite everybody in the White House.
Ranger
Rick, or whatever his name is. But you know, my father spent his entire lifetime studying biology, chemistry, how it affects human how it affects biological processes. Believe it or not, folks, we and every other animal species, we're not that different from each other internally. A lot of the medicines are the exact same. And so, without going into a lot of detail, my dad's like, look, my dad was watching Biden speak the other day at West Point or something, and he said he was obviously running out of gas at the end. And I said, well, Dad, what do you mean by that? He's like, well, they're obviously giving him something. I'm not gonna try and diagnose him from 1,000 miles away, but they're obviously giving the man something to juice him up, and then it eventually wears off. You know, various stimulants, things like that. You know, the old urban legend is that back in the day, the Kennedy family used to take thousands of milligrams of B vitamins, you know, give you that healthy glow and kind of amp you up. And so, you know, there's things that are, look, there are substances on this planet that are stimulants and depressants. And they're obviously giving Biden some sort of stimulant. Because, Chris, we see him. Mm-hmm. We see him when they don't give him anything because he's almost comatose. And then he does things like the State of the Union where he's bouncing off the walls.
Tim, what are you trying to insinuate? Because there was a bag of stimulants, illegal stimulant, that was found in the White House earlier this year.
Do you know what, Chris? It's amazing. It's too bad we'll never know what happened, though, right? They closed the case on that.
No fingerprints. Couldn't get any fingerprints on it. No cameras. Yes. You know, even though cameras show you who's going in and out of that area.
One of the most secure locations on the planet, crawling with Secret Service, military, police officers, all sorts of security cameras. You probably can't pass gas the wrong way in the White House without somebody knowing who did it. And yet, Chris, we have no idea how the bag of cocaine made it into the library. You know, it sounds like a game of Clue, right? Bag of cocaine in the library, left there by Mrs. Peacock or Kamala Harris or whoever, allegedly.
Now, Ted Cruz has taken Hunter Biden's defense in this. He does not believe that the bag of cocaine is Hunter Biden's. He said he has entered through that area many, many times, and he says that a first family would not enter in through the White House, through that area. That's more for high-level staff and that nature. He thinks it was somebody, a high-level staff member's cocaine, who accidentally left it out there.
Were they bringing it to Hunter Biden?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe the chief of staff is Hunter's dealer.
It's his bag man.
Who knows?
Yeah. We got a great show today for all y'all at 4:25 in just a moment. We're going to speak to David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. Big announcement last week. The current mayor, Tashara Jones, running for re-election next year, she's going to have at least one challenger. Alderwoman Kara Spencer has announced a second run for St. Louis mayor. Would that be more of the same? Would that be better or for worse? Do we care? Why should we care? We'll talk to David Stokes about that at 4:25, along with a ton of other stuff. At 4:45, we got Chris's Corner lined up for a Tuesday here.
Yeah, the Democrats, the Bidens are panicking. Political has it all. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it.
At
4:45.
Fantastic.
And Tim, there's rumors going around that Dave Stokes will be in studio with us today. I don't know if that's true or not.
Those are unsubstantiated, but maybe Joey can make that happen in the next few minutes or so. All right. And then you'll be able to see David Stokes on camera if he happens to stop by. At 5:07, we'll have a very special Speaker Stump Speech edition today. We are going to feature Missouri State Representative Ben Baker. We reported that very sad, tragic news to you at the very end of the week last week. Unfortunately, one of Ben Baker's daughters, Natalie, and her husband, Davey, were killed at the hands of a group of murderous Haitian gangs. They were missionaries. They were career missionaries. They were serving the people of Haiti. And Chris, we're back to the time. We're back to the day and age like we were in the 1600s and 1700s, where where the world is murdering missionaries who are trying to help the people that they are trying to serve.
Yeah, and that's the saddest thing about this. Representative Baker put on his Facebook page over the weekend a picture from his daughter's Facebook page of a group of young Haitian children, and he talked about how her life was dedicated to helping their lives become better. And what a tragedy this was that her and her young husband, both of them young, were cut down so senselessly at such a young age. They had so much to offer and were doing such good things for those folks, and it's a tragedy.
And I think it's wonderful that, I'm sure it's extremely difficult and very courageous for Ben and his family to be doing media, but they want to do media because they want the story of these lives to be told. They also want to give us an update on the harrowing set of circumstances that's in place to try to bring their bodies back home. I understand that our congressional delegation is helping out mightily with that. They're hoping to get them back here to the States for a proper burial and memorial ceremony later this week. So we'll talk to them about that. And we'll talk to him about all you can help. There's probably, Chris, there's a couple GoFundMe pages set up. They are raising a significant amount of money, but can you imagine the cost trying to get bodies of your deceased back from a nation that doesn't really have a government at this time?
Exactly.
So we thank everyone for helping, and we'll tell you about those details.
And talk to him before we go to break. We have to mention the scumbags over at the Newton gun group that put out a tweet today using this tragedy, saying that the reason why the young kids over there died in Haiti is because Haiti has such lax gun laws. I mean, the nerve of these folks, and I'm glad Representative Baker addressed them, that he will take legal action unless they take that tweet down.
Probably one of the dumbest things that someone could say. You're going to attach gun control to a nation that's been in a civil war for 3 years? Of course there's going to be guns there. They're in a civil war, and our Second Amendment rights or the left's ability to, or the left's desire to take them away, has nothing to do with this situation.
And it's a lawless society. What the hell good is law's going to do in a lawless society?
Yeah. It's insane. They don't have a government right now. They couldn't pass a gun law if they wanted to. It's the stupidest thing ever.
And who's going to enforce it?
Right. I'm glad Ben pushed back on that. 5:25 p.m., Randy Tolber, host of the Randy Tolber Show here on Newstalk SDL. We'll be discussing all the big issues of the day, including what's happening around the globe and here on our home front. There was a big rally last week at the end of the week in the Bronx. We're gonna find out what Randy thinks about Donald Trump going into all sorts of enemy territory, expanding his electoral map as Biden seems to be shrinking. All of that and more on a jam-packed Tim Jones and Chris Arp show. David Stokes standing by to talk to us about the mayoral race. Yeah, we're already talking about elections. Of course we are, here at 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
A rematch is set for next year's St. Louis mayoral race. Today, Alderwoman Kara Spencer announcing her campaign. In 2021, Mayor Jones and Alderwoman Spencer were only separated by fewer than 2,500 votes.
I want to see us grow. I want to see us have safer communities. And I want to see us just do the work of being a city. If we cannot keep our residents from moving out of the city, we're not doing our job. So my goal, it will be to keep every resident here, to grow that population instead of continuing to see it decline.
4:30 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. You know, Tim, I was listening to a podcast last week and they were talking about this race and talking about the population of the city of St. Louis. And it still just blows my mind when they talk about St. Louis has a population of under 300,000 people.
You know what's larger?
It really blows my mind.
You know what's larger now? Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah, amazing.
Isn't that unbelievable?
That's amazing. We got a great guest in studio with us. We can talk about the mayor's race and other issues. He's here in studio with us.
David Stokes over at the Show Me Institute.
In high school, you talk about this, I had a very short spiked.
It was, I knew there was a spike somewhere in that stuff.
It wasn't very punky. It was more Leave It to Beaver-ish, maybe.
And as he does every Tuesday, but today he's in studio with us, all relaxed with his sandals on there.
No socks, though.
Yes, I will. I teased him about that because I thought he had socks and sandals on for a minute there, but he corrected me.
Right, I did not. I mean, I wouldn't even be allowed in this building with socks and sandals.
He is David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. Okay, David, I know you don't do politics, you do policy, but we do have an important mayoral race that is coming up next year. It will be a rematch between Kara Spencer and Tashara Jones. This looks like a battle between the progressives and the progressives. Do any of these folks have any policies that can move the city of St. Louis forward, or the residents of St. Louis just doomed?
It might be the latter. But no, seriously, I want to key on, from a policy perspective, something that was just said by Alderwoman Spencer in the clip you aired, where she said something, and I don't know if I have the wording exact right, but she said something about she wanted to focus on doing the business of the city. You know, just, and that's what I would really hope that we can have for the city of St. Louis. That's what I hope for any local government, whether it be conservative, middle of the road, or progressive. Somebody who just first and foremost focuses on fixing the potholes and responding to the 911 calls. Mm-hmm. And I long for something I've tweeted about several times, but the historian me likes the comparison of something called, a group called the Sewer Socialists in Milwaukee in the 1920s and 30s and 40s, where the Socialist Party ran local government in Milwaukee for many decades. But they were called sewer socialists, and they were called that disparagingly by communists and other socialists who wanted to talk about, you know, the revolution of the proletariat, all these big things. And here in Milwaukee, you had very, very, we would use the term progressive now, liberal leaders, but they focused on trying to do just good basic local government. So they were called the sewer socialists.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And they were very popular for many decades in Milwaukee because socialist, whatever the term might be, they focused on just getting the potholes fixed and making sure the sewers worked. And that's what I hope we can get in St. Louis. And if either the incumbent mayor or the challenger, I think, would focus on, leaving aside the how extreme their progressivism might be, and just focus on doing the business of basic government, I think that would be a winning message for city voters.
So, David, putting the politics of the situation aside, both of these, and we can do that because both of these ladies have been in office for quite a while. I served in the House with Tashara Jones back in the day. I don't know much about Alderwoman Spencer. David, on their policy positions, from what you can gather, Is there actually a difference here in the choice? Do we see different philosophical leanings? Do you think one might govern on, as one of my buddies says, hogs, dogs, and fences, kind of referencing the sewer socialist there, versus being an activist in office every day?
Well, you know, part of me thinks that Mayor Jones would like to sort of run that middle road, but she's not shown the ability to just to manage government in a way that is allowing her to do that. And I'm going to cite the 911 office mergers, which is slowly but surely seeming to be getting better. But, you know, so much of modern local government is also just management.
Yes.
And that's what's so lost in what we have now is just, it's got to be, you know, your press release and watching your flanks from the right and the left and the center and everything about politics. Well, I just long for somebody who can focus on good management of it. And especially if that can be combined with good management in sort of a bipartisan local government focus on the stuff that we can all agree on. I would hope that if the incumbent mayor were to adopt that as her focus, or the challenger, who has a fairly liberal record on the board of aldermen, if they were to focus on that, I think, as I said a few minutes ago, I think that'd be a winning message, and that's the type of thing that I think everybody could support once in office.
All right, fair enough.
Speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, I got to be candid with you. I have not been following this situation with the St. Charles County libraries that are closing. It seems to have blown up into a big controversy. What's going on?
Well, the library announced a couple weeks ago that they were going to close a few of their branches, and people have that has certainly blown up. People, if you live near one of those branches, of course, you've been very upset about that. And now it seems that the County Library Board is backtracking slightly and saying they're going to reconsider their position. Mm-hmm. So, look, I love libraries. I used to be president of the University City Library Board and served on its board for many years. But the role of libraries in our lives is changing. It doesn't mean there's not still an important role. But people may use their branches less than they used to, as many people are checking things out online. And you can check books out online via your library.
That's what my wife does.
But there's a lot of cost to that. So costs to the libraries are going up. And there's nothing wrong with the library looking at, the county library board looking at other options. But, you know, there's also nothing wrong with them closing a few branches if that's the fiscally responsible thing that they need to do. Like, I will never criticize a government agency for making hard decisions. And if they, because, you know, they've got about a dozen branches out there or so. This is, they need to close three of them, then so be it. But it's also an opportunity for, you know, the people who are opposed to the closures and continuing as it is to put their money for where their mouth is and sort of go for that property tax increase. And let's find out if the people protesting the closures, if they are something you get in democracy at the local level a lot, which is a small but loud group that gets a lot of attention but doesn't really represent the interests of the people, or do more than half the people in St. Charles County want to pay a little more for the library to not close these branches? You know, that's where the property tax system is good. They can't export the cost of this onto tourists or shoppers or commuters. If they want to pay more for their libraries and they want to raise property taxes to do it, well, then they can vote to do so. And if they don't, they can go ahead with these tough decisions. I think it's a good situation.
Speaking with David Stokes of the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org. David, I know I'm the lawyer in the room, but I need a public policy update on, because I've lost track of where this case is regarding the remote workers lawsuit against the city of St. Louis as to the earnings tax. Do tell.
Well, this is the big breaking news today. The Court of Appeals ruled against, mostly, I should say, against the city and for the people suing about the remote work earnings tax. This is the decision the city made almost exactly 4 years ago now to just suddenly start charging the earnings tax, imposing the earnings tax on people working for businesses in the city but working from their homes. Obviously, when the pandemic hit, that increased tremendously. But the city has no legal authority to do that. They just unilaterally made this decision, and it was a terrible one. And they're still insisting that they're in the right. They lost in court last year. They just lost today at the Court of Appeals, which said what they're doing is wrong. It now remains to be seen whether the city's going to appeal all the way to the state Supreme Court, which presumably will also rule against them because they can read plain English, and the law says for work done or services performed in the city of St. Louis, not near it, not connected by a wire, but in the city. So it's been, we've been talking for years about what the city of St. Louis has done here is just wrong. It's not like, oh, we have difference of opinion here. I mean, it's just improper and illegal what they're doing. Now, I should be fair. The city didn't completely lose. The lawyers opposing the remote earnings tax were also seeking class action status, and the judges have ruled against that. So it doesn't appear that there's going to be, unless the case continues to be appealed, it doesn't appear that there's going to be a large class action going back several years to get back money. You know, the point is, a lot of people aren't going to sue over $500, which is, you know, throwing it out there, probably what most people would get, something like that. So,
trying to save the city from bankruptcy.
Right. The city won that class action, but it was made very clear that what they're doing, imposing the earnings tax on remote work is wrong, and the city should stop it immediately.
Gotcha.
David, it seems like the pandemic was a bonanza for shysters. How many stories have we heard of people using loan money that was supposed to be for the pandemic and ripping it off? Tony Messenger had a story about a homeless service leader who resigned over St. Louis contracts. And then we hear about St. Louis County Executive Sam Page. Apparently there's $12.5 million in pandemic money that's left over. He says they don't have enough staff to use that money and in some type of program. Sam Page wants to just throw that money into the general budget and use it to pay off bills. Your thoughts?
Well, it's a very, let me start off, this is definitely a very complicated situation, and it's very political. So this is a little tricky for us to discuss here. Because it really does seem to be coming down to a dispute between members of the council and the county executive's office. And what you have here is that certain nonprofits were hired to perform certain functions during the pandemic and in the time shortly after it. And they haven't been paid by the county out of these federal funds. And there's a major argument now as to how they should go about doing that. And most of the members of the council seem to favor using the federal ARPA money to pay it off. And the county executive's position is that, you know, it's so tracking this money and making sure it's properly spent and not going to be subject to clawback from the federal government is admittedly complicated, and they don't have the ability to do that properly. So I think they've suggested just using RAMS money to pay the nonprofits back, which they can do without any concerns of federal oversight or federal regulatory authority, which would potentially be a pretty smart solution to it. I would hope everybody would agree that these nonprofits who lived up to their contract, and I don't think there's any accusation that they didn't adhere to their contracts. And trust me, some nonprofits who get government contracts don't always adhere to it.
We've seen the post stories.
Right, like the first story you led off with about the woman at the homeless group who had to resign. So it's not always adhered to, but these ones that the dispute is over, I think everybody agrees they lived up to their contract. They do need to be paid, and it's unfortunate that they haven't been. A lot of these nonprofits are struggling right now because they owe bills and salaries and the like. Is using RAMS money the smart compromise to get it done? It may well be, and I wouldn't have any objection to that.
David, there was a boom of food trucks, especially over the last 4 years here because of the pandemic. People couldn't go to restaurants, so the restaurant came to them. Apparently, the red tape now, is government striking back now on these food trucks and trying to over-regulate them?
Absolutely. And what was so crazy about this hearing in the St. Louis City Board of Aldermen, and this is a city issue, this article, but this has happened around the state, dispute over food trucks and where they can operate and how they're licensed, cities and counties throughout Missouri. But in St. Louis, they had a hearing about a week ago, and the crazy thing was even the elected officials were surprised at how tight the regulations were on food trucks. Like they'd passed their own ordinances in the city board of aldermen, and I would say they made the mistake of giving the street department and the parks department and the license bureau some authority to like fill in the blank where they could do additional regulations. And those agencies went too far, at least if you believe the reactions to the Board of Aldermen, which I do. I mean, it's really crazy that to work on a food truck, and this is just one of many examples, you need at all times like an ID around your neck with a passport quality photo of who you are. Every new employee needs to get this. Restaurant employees don't have to do this. This is crazy that you would regulate that and require that for food truck employees. It's all these additional ones. And so I have a blog post up at chomyinstitute.org that people should check out. It's a good example to my mind that, you know, the enemies of freedom, the people looking to expand in government, they're not always elected officials. Sometimes they're the bureaucrats, mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. that are just out there trying in their own more subtle ways to expand the power of the state, mm-hmm. to expand the power of government, maybe to expand, help out the entrenched interests that they're supportive of. Say, for example, restaurants here looking to make it tougher on food truck competition. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's what happened in the city, but these are the things you need to be concerned about. We've done a number of videos at Show Me Institute on food trucks up at showmeinstitute.org. We've done more videos on food trucks than probably any other topic, and people should check them out. I love food trucks. People love food trucks, and the ability of local government to regulate them out of existence or to regulate them so strictly that it's almost impossible for them to operate, I think it's just terrible.
David, let me play devil's advocate for a second. Now, if I'm going to a chain restaurant or a locally owned restaurant or whatever, and the employees are working there, I have a trust that, okay, if they're working for this established, well-established restaurant or a chain, I can trust that these employees are probably following proper hygiene. They're probably following corporate rules for the restaurant. Joe Schmo with some truck down on Market Avenue, I want to know who they are. I want to know your picture. I want to make sure that you've gone through all of the qualifications necessary to open this food truck. And if I see some official passport photo and some badge you have to wear, that gives me confidence that this person is not going to give me botulism or some type of disease or something from their food truck.
Food trucks are subject, in those cases, to all the same health code regulations that restaurants are.
Right.
And they should be. What you've seen in the city is how they've imposed these rules that go far beyond what a restaurant would have to say. Far beyond limits on where they can. They're only allowed to operate in the city,
sure.
on certain special events and a few blocks in the Central West End, a few other places. They can't even operate in most of the city, in most of the locations.
I mean, when you see these guys down at the ballpark, all of them have IDs and pictures showing who they are. Those vendors.
Like a Busch Stadium thing.
Why can't a food truck person?
But my waiter at a restaurant doesn't have a photo ID when they come up to me. This is way over the top. The cooks at the restaurant don't have that type of thing. Yes, they have health training, mm-hmm. and the food truck operators should have the same I think that restaurants are generally overregulated to start with, but beside the fact, food trucks should be subject to the same rules as regulations from a health code perspective.
Okay.
But we're seeing around the state cities over-regulating them far beyond that. Sometimes at the behest of the restaurant industry, who believe it or not, and I know this is going to stun you, sometimes people use local government to advantage themselves economically and limit their competition. I know your listeners are going to wreck their cars. It'd be so amazing to hear that as they drive around.
Well, David, you're very passionate about this, and I don't want you to like reach over and hit me or anything. But so tell me, upcoming guest for Show Me Institute. I know you guys it's been a while. You guys need a big guest.
I don't think we have any major speakers coming soon, but we have several events around the state coming up. We've got talks in Springfield and Joplin, in early June, and back to one in St. Louis, in Clayton, in mid-June. And all these things are available up at showmeinstitute.org on our events page. And it's great that we're back having lots of events now. And so people, the listeners, please make a bookmark of that Show Me Institute events page and check it every couple of weeks, because we're having more and more, and we'd love to have your listeners out to them, as well as you guys as well.
Mm-hmm. David, thank you so much for coming in today. We appreciate it. David
Stokes. I'm going to go get dinner from a food truck. just for you, Chris.
Director, I'll bring you back something. Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. We will see you hopefully again next Tuesday in studio. Can we make it 2 weeks in a row?
I'm going to try.
Wow. Thank you, David Stokes. When we come back, Chris's Corner will give you a little Biden update news. They are panicking, and they're not even trying to hide it anymore. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Harb Show on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And to top off this tomfoolery, Trump floated Florida Congressman Byron Donalds as a potential vice presidential pick. Donalds, who backed Trump's lie that Biden authorized the feds to take him out,
that guy, the one black guy that Republicans love to roll out as fake proof that black people, the blacks, are just MAGA. They're MAGA. It's a joke, and just as credible as when they pretended they were going to make that guy Speaker of the House, because they weren't going to do that either.
454 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. That is Joy Reid of MSDNC expressing sentiments that a lot of progressive liberals have when an African-American expresses his own opinions and doesn't follow the Democratic talking points. Joy can say all that she wants. So the polls are saying that 23-25% of African-Americans are supporting Donald Trump. She can laugh at that all she wants, but the truth is the truth. And I got a good feeling that Byron Donalds in November will probably be the last one laughing, not Joy Reid. Let's do it, Joy.
Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, if Joe Biden and the Democrats weren't worried about the black vote, then why are they sending Representative Jim Clyburn out on a cross-country tour to help President Joe Biden shore up his support among black voters in the swing states? Even though polling shows that Joe Biden is close to underwater with African Americans, the 83-year-old Clyburn, who basically saved Joe Biden's candidacy in 2024, insists that it's not accurate. He says, "I don't know what all this polling's about. Joe Biden does not have a problem with black voters. Whatever you hear to the contrary, that's just not true." Yeah, sure, Jim. You know, a Bank of America report poll came out that said fewer than half of working adults say they're feeling financially well. 53% of men say they felt financially well. Just 36% of women said the same. We all know what the ugliest man in politics, John Carville, said back in 1992. It is the economy, stupid. That's what people are concerned about, and that's what most elections turn on. You know, in my show prep, I read political.com, which is kind of an insider Washington website, and they have a newsletter. They're pretty straight down the middle of the road when it comes to their covers. They lean a little bit left, but they do try to get the story. They've got a report in their paper today that says that top Democratic strategists and elected officials are absolutely panicking. Here's a quote from the piece. This is from a Democratic operative. He says, "This isn't, oh my God, Mitt Romney might become president. It's, oh my God, the democracy might end." There's Pete Giangreco, a longtime Democratic strategist. He said, "There's still a path to win this, but they don't look like a campaign that's embarking on that path right now. If the frame of this race is what was better, the 3.5 years under Biden or 4 years under Trump, we'd lose that every day of the week and twice on Sunday." And finally, Mark Levine, Manhattan Borough President, he said, "The people of New York, including people of color that I came across, who are saying positive about Trump is alarming." So they're in trouble, and they're starting to say the loud pollard part out loud. Speaker Stone speech at 5:05, excuse me, we will have Ben Baker, Missouri State Representative, who tragically lost his daughter. And at 5:24, Randy Tober, host of the Randy Tober Show. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.